Yeah, absolutely.
WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into our anniversary week. You only turn 25 once around here. I got the silver coming in just to prove. We're going to be at Costas on Thursday celebrating 25 years and giving away scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery, as well as giving away a whole bunch of other crap that I have. I have Free the Bird shirts. I have old nasty newsletters. Luke, you remember the nasty van? We have all this stuff here. There's the show I did with Buddy Ryan and Lawrence Taylor. All of this fun stuff will be given away on Thursday, including copies of Purple Rain 1, Purple Rain 2, posters, CDs, hats, shirts, bumper stickers, stuff, just stuff. We're going to give it all away. Come down and get it. That's Thursday at Costas, Friday at Drug City. We're doing the show. It's all brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90 Nation. I'll have the fun floppy hat on. By the time we get there, the Orioles will have Verlander, Ohtani, and I don't know. They might even deal for BJ Surhoff and bring him back. I don't know. Trading deadline is up. There's not a whole lot of oxygen for the football team. Although I will say, now that I've been thrown out by Chad Steele, I don't really get to hear the screams of the fans and all this stuff. And God, the Ravens social media is so. It's just all about waiting for fingertip catches or some kid to get pushed over and Odell Beckham to help him. But the viral videos and the screaming of the kids and the heat and Lamar, 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 and OBJ, OBJ, OBJ. Luke, I don't know how you're doing this. I mean, the Orioles don't let me in, the Ravens don't let me in, they only let you in. You have to do double duty. You've had quite a week, right? I mean, between the baseball over the weekend and the Ravens, have been mainly quiet. Let's keep it that way, for the most part. But the Ravens are still going on, and it's been very overshadowed by nine innings every night.
It has been, and I think that's okay, right? And there's plenty of excitement for training camp. Let's be clear. I mean, go look. You just mentioned as much as a lot of the social media content is not catered toward you or to me, there is plenty of juice. And you just mentioned it. It was striking to me on the first day when they had their first full squad workout on Wednesday. So accustomed at this point to Lamar getting the rock star treatment from the kids in attendance and just the overall reaction. A pop, as they called in pro wrestling, right? Who gets the biggest pop? Odell Beckham, I'm not saying it's as big or bigger than the reaction that Lamar Jackson gets, but boy, it's close. And you really see the excitement. And I mean, this guy's a celebrity, not just a pro athlete. He's a celebrity. He has 17 million followers on Instagram, by the way. I mean, it just speaks to what kind of stature he has that goes beyond not having a great run the last few years as an NFL wide receiver. But there's just a lot of excitement on that front. You are right. It is being overshadowed right now by the Orioles, and that's okay. It's okay to have more excitement
But
about
it's rare and unique.
it is.
I
It
mean, it's
is.
our
But
25th anniversary here, dude. I can't begin to tell you how many August ones you've spent the last 15 or 16 of them here with me. How many August ones where the only thing that matters is OBJ, give me your autograph. Like that there is no there on a Tuesday night for a trading deadline and the Toronto Blue Jays and meaningful baseball games being played every single night where people are much more inclined to bitch about Brandon Hyde's bullpen selection or bitch about whatever cheapskate maneuver Angelos is going to pull this week or Elias deal he's going to pull off. We're all going to weep when we lose Jordan Westberg, whatever it's going to be, right? Like none of that had any oxygen at all, that it was all Houston's coming. Houston's coming. Houston, when's the game? When's the game? It's July and the game's not till September. But for you covering the Ravens, it's still serious business out there. For the 25,000 people that went down and sweat their nuts off at the stadium on Saturday out in the heat, it's still there. That heartbeat is still there. They can't win or lose until September 10th. And I guess from that perspective, this feels really different. I mean, it's different over at 105.7. It's different for reporters. It's different for everybody. It's different for where the fans' minds are that they're going to play 35 baseball games, 40 baseball games between now and then, and all of them are going to hook the way the Yankees games did over the weekend, the way the Phillies games, and when they lose, it's going to hurt. All of that emotion gets tied up into that. There's not much you can go get an autograph, you can go yell, you can sweat, you're going to be out there doing all that. They're not going to do anything. And we used to just sort of make it up for 5 or 6 weeks. There would be news in regard to the Ravens. I mean, the Orioles are making real news between the lines every night.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think here's the reality. And this was always true, but it's become even more apparent with the preseason games becoming what they've become, where you're not going to see many of the starters at all. Didn't see many of the starters at all last year. You get to a point where there's a novelty to it, right? And the same thing happens post-draft. First OTA, it's really exciting. Hey, first time we've seen these guys on the field since January. And then you kind of settle in. Mandatory minicamp. Exciting, but it's 3 days, right? So you see the whole team for 3 days, then they go away again. So there's always that excitement at the beginning of training camp. And look, we're not talking about fans going out there on a daily basis. That is a great experience. You know, I still have so many fond memories of going to Westminster as a kid with my dad. And, you know, when I was in high school, going with my best buddy. But when you're just talking about following it as a fan from afar, assuming you're not going out there every single day, once you get past the first couple of days, and now this week, as they put the pads on and they start to hit, there's another, you know, not a rite of passage, but another checkpoint, let's say. The first preseason game, there was always some buzz until you realize, oh, this is fake football. Now I don't even know if there's as much buzz with that because you know Lamar is not playing. You know the big stars aren't playing. It really comes down to this, Nestor. Once they settle into a routine, the only significant news, barring a signing, and, you know, they could still add an edge rusher. You know, Justin Houston's still out there, although the sense I've gotten early in camp is there is nothing imminent on that front. You know, that could change with one phone call, but who knows? You know, they could still add a veteran corner. But let's face it, look around the NFL over the opening week of camp. What was the biggest news beyond some contracts here and there? It was Jalen Ramsey going down with a meniscus injury and probably going to be out for the season. Best case scenario is out until December. And Joe Burrow being carted off with what turned out to be a calf injury, which doesn't look catastrophic, but looks like it's going to keep him out for the preseason. So the point is, this time of year, the big news that grabs attention is typically bad news. So if you're the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh, yeah, the J.K. Dobbins thing, we'll talk about that and we'll continue to talk about that. But there's only so much to talk about. He's not practicing right now. It's a hold in, you know, it's no one says it publicly, but that's what it is. But beyond that, it's been a relatively nondescript start to training camp, and that's okay. And it makes it even better when you're in a market like the Baltimore right now, where you have a baseball team that has the best record in the AL that, you know, most of the discourse is on that. There's still Ravens topics to cover, and who's looking good, who's not, how's the Todd Monken's offense look so far, and, you know, all those different topics that you always cover this time of year. But at the same time, there's only so much happening in terms of headlines that are going to be grabbed. And again, this time of year, no news is good news, generally speaking. And at least for the first week, you know, the Ravens got through training camp without any significant injuries, other than just talking about some of the guys coming back from some pre-existing stuff.
He is Luke Jones. He will be out sweating this week, but not as much. Better humidity here this week as the Orioles go out on the road and have trading deadline and then coming back home this week. What are you looking for out there? And I guess the obvious would just be where Lamar is different. And that's really the touch point for this whole offense. And it is amazing to me how shat upon Greg Roman is. Everywhere I go where there is a football conversation, the prescription was not Greg Roman, that this is going to fix things by getting rid of him. And I think there were many guardrails put on the offense by Greg Roman based on what he felt Lamar could do, what he felt the players around Lamar could do, what he felt like their best chance of getting the next first down would be in many cases with Greg Roman. I don't know much about Todd Monken. I didn't watch the Georgia offense. I know he's been in the league. I know what his reputation is and that he can work with anybody and everybody and he's pliable and all that. But in his vision for what this can be and what it's going to be with this offensive line, not the one from 19 with Orlando Brown and a younger Ronnie Stanley and all that, not what this would look like with the crappy wide receivers and Willie Snead and the crackdown blocking that they wanted to do. And I don't even know what the J.K. Dobbins situation, if he's not going to be on the field for all of August, what Monken makes of him or thinks of him or garners from tape if he's not going to be out there playing to say this is how we're going to utilize him. But to me, this is a Monken Lamar Jackson show, and to figure out what they're trying to do, because apparently they wanted to blow up what they used to do, right? And it's going to be Lamar pass, Lamar pass. We're not going to put Lamar in harm's way. Lamar's not going to run as much. I want to see what that looks like. And I know we're not going to see it until September, but I'm thinking you're seeing it practiced out there, because what else would they be doing besides installing a brand new offense?
Yeah, and that's what's so fascinating. And, you know, you mentioned Greg Roman at the top. And look, I think this is very common that when things go poorly, I think fans and media as well tend to look at the coaching. And look, coaching really matters. Let's be very clear about that. I'm not trying to discount the impact that an offensive coordinator and a coaching staff will make, or a defensive coordinator in turn. But when things are going poorly, it tends to be the coach's fault. When things go really well, like they did in 2019, for example, the players get the credit. And the coach might get credit at that point in time, but it can be very fleeting. So I find it interesting, because I've even pondered this, and I've talked about this with some people out in Owings Mills, you know, and just some other media and whatnot. But I wrote this from the moment that Greg Roman, you know, they decided to part ways with him, that they could make a hire of a home run of a hire, you know, whether it was Todd Monken or whoever they were ultimately going to hire as their offensive coordinator. And it could work out really well, and it could take Lamar Jackson and this offense to new heights. And say what you want about Greg Roman, they had a historic 2019 season. Their running game was as great as anything we've seen over a 2 or 3 year stretch in NFL history, or at least modern NFL history, let's say. But you know, it had plateaued. It had gotten to a point where you could tell it wasn't moving forward anymore for whatever the reason, coaching personnel, quarterbacks, lack of availability, all those different factors. And it's never one variable. But the point is, even if they made a home run of a hire, even if Todd Monken ends up looking like he's the greatest offensive coordinator in team history, he is going to be hard pressed. This Ravens offense this year, next year, the year after that, is going to be hard pressed to match what they did in 2019. That was historical efficiency. They had a quarterback who led the league in touchdown passes, who also ran for 1,200 yards.
They were in second and one and second and two more than any team in the history of the NFL.
So my point is, look, Greg Roman wasn't able to duplicate that in the 3 years that followed that. And that's one of the reasons he's not employed anymore. You know, one of many reasons why the Ravens decided to make the change that they did. But the point is, now, how does it evolve? It could work out beautifully, but you're not going to find that level of offensive efficiency. I mean, that was a historic performance that 2019 team had. But what are they trying to do differently now? Clearly a passing game. Doesn't mean I think that they're going to lead the league in passing percentage in terms of run-pass ratio. Are they going to run or pass more than they have in the past? Yes, I feel that that's the truth. Do I think they're going to abandon the running game whatsoever? Well, go look at what Todd Monken did at Georgia. That team won a couple national championships. The running game was still very prevalent in what they did. So I don't think a John Harbaugh-led football team is going to suddenly abandon the running game. So more balance, more explosiveness. I think one thing that's been evident in the first week, and there's not a whole lot you can take away because it's still very much a work in progress. Heck, they haven't even put on the pads yet, as you and I are recapping this. But what has been evident to me, and what was indisputably a problem with Greg Roman's offense and had become more problematic over the last couple of years, they are practicing and playing with a quicker tempo. They are getting to the line of scrimmage more quickly. That's giving Lamar Jackson more time to assess pre-snap, adjusting the protection, adjusting the play call, moving players around the formation. You can't do those things that I just mentioned if you're getting to the line of scrimmage with 5 seconds to go on the play clock, as they repeatedly were doing the last couple of years. So if there's anything
But hang on a second. They're talking about taking the wristband off of Lamar, right?
We'll see about that.
If you're not talking about that, that's almost like controversial, right? Because he always had it. He's always flipping through it. Now the new offensive coordinator says, no, he's got to have that in his head. The old offensive coordinator said, if he could have had it in his head, that wouldn't have had it on his arm. Like I like, and we wouldn't have been 5 seconds getting into this. And as much as Roman's been blamed, I haven't heard from Roman. Again, I'm not a media member anymore. I'm not allowed to talk to these guys. It'd be interesting to see what Greg Roman would say about getting those plays in late. And whatever that, what if we could be real reporters and really talk to these guys and find out what the mechanisms were for all of that, then one thing, Greg Roman getting beaten up, that's cool. It's fun for everybody. We're still beating up Jim Fossil and he's dead. We're beating up Matt Cavanaugh. I'm looking at old pictures of him. Everybody who was ever the offensive coordinator here, Cam Cameron, they were all the Village Idiot. In the end, every quarterback that was ever here was the Village Idiot too, including Flacco, right? In the end, he wasn't good enough and he was maligned. So to beat up the quarterback, Kyle Bowler, to beat up the offensive coordinator, name any of them. I guess only Jim Caldwell and Kubiak got out of here alive because they didn't, they left before they could be run out. I mean, if Roman would have gotten a head coaching job in 20 or 21 during the plague, we wouldn't have been able to run him out, right? I find it fascinating that all of the angst about Roman, that we think that we fixed it. And God bless him if they have, but I still think there's a lot for Lamar to do here. And all eyes will be on Monken, but in the end, all eyes are going to be on Lamar on Sunday at 1 o'clock throughout September and October. They play a lot of 1 o'clock Sunday games.
Yeah, as they should be when you're talking about someone who has accomplished what he's accomplished over the first 5 years of his career in the regular season. And now the contract, there's no longer the business side that's being talked about. So that's absolutely true. So, but what you just laid out, I mean, that's how it works. And by the way, Jim Caldwell was much maligned in 2013 with the way their running game fell off a cliff and their offense was, they got rid of Anquan Boldin and suddenly Joe Flacco wasn't the Joe Flacco we saw the previous January. So it you're absolutely right. And look, where does the truth fall? Was it all Greg Roman's fault or was it all everything else's fault? The truth is somewhere in between, right? I think you look at where their offense was. I think it just comes down to this, and it's very simplistic. And that's why, you can't fire all the players. You weren't going to fire the entire coaching staff. But you do look at who's in charge of the offense. It was Greg Roman. And there had been some backsliding that had gone on over the last couple of years. It wasn't all his fault. But I think if you look at a pattern, whether we're talking about play clock issues, go back to Buffalo, go back to San Francisco. You can go find topics of conversation pertaining to that with a Greg Roman offense. A passing game that plateaued. Same thing happened in previous stops. So there's a pattern there. Doesn't mean it's all his fault. Greg Roman didn't pick the wide receivers, for example, that did or did not work out. So, but at the same time, go back and look at the tape. There were deep balls that Lamar Jackson missed last year. There were guys open that he missed. It's everything. So again, what are they trying to do now? Clearly the passing game has more of a focus. There's been more of a focus on it in adding wide receivers. Certainly this offseason, Zay Flowers, talked a lot about Beckham, Zay Flowers, who's been dealing with a little bit of a stomach bug and missed a couple days of practice here over the weekend, but he's impressive. And I've heard from players, even some members of the organization, that there's a lot of excitement about this kid, that they think, I'm not saying he's going to be their number one wide receiver from day one, but they think he's that kind of player, that kind of potential.
Well,
that
for the offensive coordinator to call him a toy, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he moves really well. He's not big, but he plays bigger than Hollywood Brown ever did. I don't want to.
Well, the Steve Smith comparison is.
Yeah, well,
what I'm looking
I'm not ready to go that far either, because you're talking about a fringe Hall of Fame type wide receiver there. But he's got potential to really be. It's a pretty low bar, completely acknowledging that. And hey, who are you talking to? A guy who's banged the table about wide receivers for over a decade now, covering this team. But he's got the potential to be something special for them. At least that's what I hear. And early on in camp, he's looked good. So we'll see how it plays out, of course.
I remember when you started banging the tables, by the way. It was like I was in the middle of writing Purple Rain 2, which we'll be giving away at Costas this Thursday. Stop by. Pick up anything you want. Everything I have is free at Costas. I want to point that out. But I remember walking in that night to the Meyerhoff, where the Ravens were showing their Super Bowl video, and I'm in the lobby, and the WNST text went off, and it said Anquan Boldin, San Francisco 40, and I'm like, that was right the moment that Luke broke out the started dipping the pen into the ink and saying we need wide receivers, and all the Breshad Perryman, you know, and all the Hollywood Brown, and all like all and yeah. every name them all, Macklin, Wallace, like go through.
Do
all,
I have to?
Right? No, right?
Do I have to? But no, you're right.
They brought Deshaun Jackson in here last year. He ran around,
and he left. He basically quit. I mean, that's kind of sort of what happened with him last year.
So did the quarterback, by the way. But we gave him $150 million.
He was hurt. Let's not.
I just hope he makes the trip to Cincinnati for the next playoff.
Okay, but let's not let facts get in the way of a good story. You know, like he was hurt. Now, Deshaun Jackson, that was another wide
receiver too, and he should have been on the sidelines with his teammates in Cincinnati. And I'll never back down from that.
He was hurt.
Okay,
but he was hurt. You know, like don't make it out that he quit. You know, that quitting on your team,
I only
healthy
report
is way
I
different
see.
Than being legitimately hurt.
Okay,
but I'm telling you, he was hurt. You know, and look, I'm not saying he. We spent a whole offseason talking about
I
that.
I know we did.
Bringing it back to this offense. We spent two off
seasons
talking about that.
He's working hard now, all of a sudden. So,
this off season, or this training camp, you know, this preseason, are we going to see a lot that's going to really give us a great idea of what this offense is going to look like? Yes and no. You know, again, tempo. I do think you're going to see them spread out way more. I think you're going to see much less of the heavy packages. You know, with Ricard on the field constantly. One, Ricard's still recovering from off-season hip surgery. But I think you're going to see more 11 personnel, more three wide receiver sets. Doesn't mean that that's all they're going to do, but I think you'll see them spread out more. I think you'll see them run from those types of formations with a lighter box, you know, a defense putting fewer defenders in the box because you spread them out and you can run the football that way. You know, that's something that Sean McVay and the Rams did very successfully, you know, when Todd Gurley was at his best, running from 11 personnel. So, you know, so you're going to see different things like that. Certainly there's going to be so much attention on the passing game, but I'll say this much, what we've seen early on in camp, and mind you, as I mentioned, Zay Flowers has missed some practice time. Rashad Bateman's still on the PUP list. So the tight ends are still going to be very heavily involved, and it makes sense, right? I mean, we've said all along, talk all you want about Beckham. I just spent 2 minutes talking about Zay Flowers and the excitement with him, you know, Rashad Bateman, if he comes back healthy, but Mark Andrews is still their number one receiver. You know, he's other than Travis Kelce, he's, you know, for my money, he's as good as any tight end in football, as
and
great as any tight end
in football.
And he punches
less teammates
in
practice than Travis Kelce does too. So yes,
that's true. So
we haven't had any of that,
is,
by the way, right? I mean, the Browns had shut down their camp. I mean, like out in Owings Mills at this point, that's the kind of crap I don't want to see. The Browns running sprints because they fight too much. I mean, stop.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's going to be some scuffle. There are going to be some scuffles. You have some of that. You know, there could be a couple guys that take a swing. Now, you don't want to see anyone break someone's jaw or swing in a helmet like
a buffoon or
anything like
that.
Well,
that is a possibility when you take a swing, right?
Yeah, sure. But at the same time, I'm also not going to make too much out of a camp fight. Tempers flare. The pads haven't come on yet. With the pads coming on this week, we'll see some pushing and shoving. We'll see some of that. But yeah, you want to avoid that. You want to avoid the catastrophic injuries. You know, we haven't mentioned too much about J.K. Dobbins, but the Dobbins watch continues. He's out there, you know, in terms of going out there to observe practice. He's in the building. It's working out. He's just not taking part in practice right now. But as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, as much as I don't think that's moving the needle for him whatsoever, one iota trying to get a new contract or getting more money out of the Ravens or anything like that, what I will say is if you look at it logically from his perspective, he says, all right, I'm not getting a new contract immediately, or at least the money that I want for a new contract. But if I can mitigate a little bit of my risk, practicing in late July, practicing the first week of August, maybe even practicing the second week of August, and I'm just working out, I'm making sure my body's in great shape, I'm taking care of myself, and I hit the practice field, I don't know, August 13th, and I'm just throwing that date out arbitrarily, Nestor. But if he's on the field August 13th, he has plenty of time to get ready for the regular season. Now, there are other factors at work there, including you are contractually obligated if you are healthy, which is why he's on the PUP list and, you know, is telling them I'm not quite right. And John Harbaugh didn't touch this the other day because, hey, the team put him on the PUP list and that's physically unable to perform. So they cannot come right out and say, we don't think JK's hurt. Because if they do, then they subject themselves to probably some a fine or something along those lines because he's on that list. But the point is, if you're him, get out there mid-August. You're healthy. You have plenty of time to get ready. Now, you better stay healthy. You better not tweak a hamstring the first day of practice, whenever it is for you. You better have a good season because if you don't, then everyone's going to be pointing to that. But my long story short, do I think that that is a colossal issue for them right now that's holding their offense hostage or anything like that? No. Do I think probably there's, you know, are there people annoyed in the building, including maybe some of his teammates who are out there sweating their butts off while he's not practicing, even though he's under contract and obligated to practice too? I'm sure there's probably some of that, but he's doing what he and plenty of other running backs are trying to figure out right now. And I can't say I like his chances that this is helping him at all. But if you're J.K. Dobbins, if you're his agent, you say, you know what? We're not going to get a deal right now. And whether it's with the Ravens or some other team after the season, we think sitting out practice in late July in the first week or two in August, it keeps him healthy, keeps him away from some defensive lineman falling into his knee. And you know what? There's probably some merit to that. If we're being totally honest, and John Harbaugh would have a, you know, would have a hissy fit hearing me say this right now. But if we're being totally honest, does training camp need to be as long as it is? You know, the pandemic year, they didn't start, you know, they started a little bit later. You know, that was a much more condensed kind of preseason. You know, I think the product was okay that year. Lack of fans and all that, you know, COVID stuff aside, the play on the field. You know, do they need a full training camp? Does every veteran player need the full training camp to be out there every single day of practice? Probably not. But coaches want it. Front offices want it. The players are contractually obligated. And mind you, a collectively bargained agreement in place for the structure and parameters of training camp. So
it's amazing that you go out to training camp and you sort of expect Lamar and OBJ to be laced up that day, no matter how hot it is or whatever. But when you go to the games and you pay, you don't expect any of them to play.
Oh, sure. Exactly. Well, and again, there's another factor that kind of plays into this. Look, I'm not saying training camp has no value. Let me be very clear about that. But J.K. Dobbins or any number of other veteran players or more established players, do they need every single practice? Do they need every single day out there to make sure that they're going to be ready for the season? Probably not. But rookies, fringe veteran players who are on the bubble, guys that are trying to win a starting job, yeah, those guys, they need every rep. So J.K. Dobbins, he's their best running back. Look, with apologies to Gus Edwards or Melvin Gordon, who's now on the roster, or Justice Hill, J.K. Dobbins has more upside than any of those guys right now. And he knows that. And yet, guess what? The Ravens know that too. So I think for right now, this could change if he's still not on the field August 23rd and we're starting to, you know, we're at the end of the preseason schedule and we're talking about final cuts and talking more about the Houston Texans week one. You know, that could be a different story. But for right now, I get the sense that the Ravens are willing to play nice. You know, they're not appeasing him. They don't like it, but they get it to a point as far as where he's coming from and running backs in general. But the market is the market if you're the Ravens. So they're not going to give in, nor should they. And if you're J.K. Dobbins, you say, you know what? I may not win this battle, but if I can eliminate two early weeks of practice in terms of the risk of me getting hurt, then maybe it's worth it. And time will tell. You know, he's got to have a great season regardless. Anything late July, early August, if he goes out, you know, even if he was on the field and in practices, he goes out there and doesn't have a great year, no one's going to care that he was on the field. On the flip side, if he doesn't show up on the practice field until August 15th, but he goes out and runs for 1,200 yards or 1,300 yards this year and, you know, might be a Pro Bowl running back, who knows? No one will remember. If that happens, no one will remember nor care that he wasn't out there on August 1st. So the point is, yes, it's a talking point. Yes, it's a topic. Yes, it's news for the Ravens and what has been an otherwise quiet start to training camp. But do I think this is a major colossal issue for them right now? I don't. But I'm making the assumption that we're going to see him in the next couple weeks. You know, that we're not going to be talking about this on August 31st, wondering like, when the heck is this guy going to practice? Because then that's when I question him and saying, man, what are you doing here? Is this really going to put you in position to have your best season if you're not on the field learning Todd Monken's offense in terms of muscle memory and getting into football shape? You know, he's in the meetings and all that, so it's not as though he's not preparing. But, you know, we get to that point, then it's a different conversation. For right now, it's an issue, but I don't think it's this major issue that's hijacked the football team or anything like that.
Luke Jones will be out in Owings Mills all week. The Orioles will be playing in Toronto and then back home again. Luke will be at the ballpark as well. We're going to be celebrating 25 years at WNST on Thursday. It is our 25th anniversary. We were born on August 3rd, 1998, although I did spend May and June and most of July building the place and getting the place in order, but it's been 25 years. I found all the old pictures, lots of old memories. We're giving it all away. Anything that I have that's not nailed down will be at Costas at 11 a.m. on Thursday. We'll be there 11 to 4. All are brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, having the Crab Cake Tour. We'll have some scratch-offs to give away. Our friends at Window Nation as well, 866-90-NATION, putting it all together. The Crab Cake Tour is going to be moving to Drug City on Friday from 11 to 4. We're going to celebrate 25 years there, 2 days in Dundalk this week. Then next week, we get back out to Greenmount Station in the middle of the week up in Hampstead. Have some crab cakes up there with Chris. Talk about their sports book and their relationship with Bet Parks as well. And later in the month at Pappas in Glen Burnie, as well as some other dates. And Fadley's, we're going to be there. But this week, Costas Thursday, 11 to 4. Drug City, 11 to 4 on Friday. Lots and lots of stuff to give away. And we appreciate all the nice words and pictures and memories. People have sent me pictures of seat cushions that I didn't know still existed. Pictures of old shirts that I forgot we made. All the backs were different on the Get Nasty shirts. So some of them were sort of Preakness backs or road trip backs. So anybody that's got cool stuff, please take an image. Please send it my way. Nasty at WNST.net. Of course, you can reach Luke, Luke at WNST.net, as well as on social media. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And if you hear some old school voices around here this week, we're just celebrating 25 years because we made it. And they said we couldn't. We're BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.